You know, there's a difference between seeking and finding. They're different, aren't they? I mean, you can seek for things only with an intentional choice. However, finding, that happens by happenstance. I mean, you can find things on accident, can't you? You weren't looking for it, but all of a sudden you found it. But that's different from seeking. Take, for instance, a few illustrations of finding things. You're walking on that shag carpet you have in your downstairs, and you step on something very sharp, and you find that earring that you had lost, you know? You can find it. You weren't looking for it. It wasn't an intentional decision to search the carpet, but you stepped on it and found it. Or maybe you pull out that pair of jeans that you haven't worn in a long time. I don't know if any of you are old enough to have two wardrobes. You've got the skinny wardrobe and the not quite as skinny wardrobe. And so you're in one of those and you put on those jeans and you're like, you reach in the pocket. There's a $10 bill in the pocket. I mean, you're like, whoa, I get to have a Starbucks coffee now. I mean, it's like you found it and it was accidental. You weren't searching for that $10, but there you found it accidentally. I think the time I found the most money was I once found $400. It's not often that you come across $400 of cash. I mean, whew. The good news about finding this $400 is that the person that I found it on didn't need it anymore. They were dead. Some of you are wondering, what did you do to him? When I was going through college, I worked as an apprentice mortician. That's what paid my way through college. And I happened to be putting a suit coat on this one gentleman for his funeral, and there was like a wad of cash in his pockets. I mean, I wasn't seeking it, but I found it. I found $400 of cash on this dead guy's pocket. So I took it out and stuck it in my pocket because he didn't need it anymore. No, I didn't do that. I gave it to the family. I gave it to the family. But I did find it. You know, I wasn't seeking it, but I found it. You can find things on accident, but seeking takes an intentional choice. And that is true in life in general, but it's specifically true in our spiritual lives. You can find things on accident, but you never seek God without really deciding to do that. I mean, he's at work stirring your heart, and you're submitting to him and say, yes, I want to seek you, God. Because you don't just accidentally seek God. There's no one who all of a sudden like comes to their senses, and there they are reading the Bible, and they didn't even intend to be reading the Bible, but there they are. They're just passionately pursuing God through the Word, and it happened by accident. I mean, nobody does that. Or all of a sudden you arrive at community group, and you never intended to go there. It was just sheer chance that you accidentally showed up to community group to study the Bible. I mean, that doesn't happen. You can find things by accident, but seeking takes a choice. And so it is with God. And that's why the text this morning is actually a command. He's actually just telling you, he's saying, listen, you're not going to accidentally just seek for God. I'm going to tell you what you need to do. You need to seek God. Because seeking requires the submission to God, a choice, a volitional endeavor to go after God. And so in verse number 6, he tells us, he says, so seek the Lord. What I'd like to do this morning from our text in Isaiah 55 is just talk about what does it mean to seek the Lord, and then why should we seek him? Now, those are basically the two things that I think these verses explain to us. What does it mean to seek the Lord, and then why should we seek him? So let's take a look at what it means. What does it mean to seek the Lord? And I think he describes it in a few ways. He says, you need to seek the Lord. And here's what I mean. I mean, you need to call on him. I mean, you need to forsake your sin. I mean, you need to turn to him. That's what it means to seek God. So what does it mean to seek the Lord? Well, first, Isaiah says this, if you're going to seek the Lord, it means you need to call upon him. Verse 6, seek the Lord while he may be found. In other words, here's what he says. In other words, call upon him while he is near. Now, I could give you the kind of the Hebrew word for call. I mean, what does it mean to call on God? It's the Hebrew word kara, and it simply means to call. I mean, it's not hard. I mean, it's like we all know what it means to call. mean, if you have a cell phone here this morning, then sometime this past week, you called somebody. You called out for them. Or if you went to a restaurant, maybe you needed something from the waiter or the waitress, and you called for them. You said, hey, can I get some more salt? Hey, can you get me this? Can I get a refill on my sweet tea? You called for them to do something. Maybe this last week you called your parents for some advice. Or maybe you're a child here and you called out to your brother or your sister. I have four kids, and they range from 14 to 4. So that's our span right now. And our youngest one, her name is Lydia, our 4-year-old. And I still remember, like, when she was like 2-3 years old, I still remember her calling out for her big brother. And it would be almost this song. She would call it almost in song, and it was made up of all vowels. She would go, E-I-E-R-A-O-O. Like, that was her, like, she couldn't say the whole words. But in translation, that's Eli, where are you? That's what it was. But I could still hear her as a 2-year-old with these vowel sounds just kind of singing it out. She's looking for her big brother. And what is she doing? She's calling. What does Isaiah say here? He says, listen, if you're going to seek the Lord, then you have to make a decision this morning to call out to him. I mean, you need to call out to God. And the fancy theological word for calling out to God is prayer. Just pray. And I just want to suggest this, that maybe you've been taught in your tradition that you pray with deep formalities and you use old English words, you know, from the 17th century, and you say thee and thou, and you put a th at the end of God, wherever soever thou artest, I pleadeth with theeth that thouest wouldeth. I mean, wait, that's not the type of prayer call that you really need in your life. Man, I don't know anyone who's really gotten to a point in their life where they needed to really seek the Lord that all of a sudden they break out into old English. You know, if you got to a place where you needed to seek the Lord, you actually just started crying out to him. I mean, you didn't even start with, dear Heavenly Father, you're just broken, you're needy, and all of a sudden you just said, God, I am in such need right now. God, I'm in such pain right now. God, I feel really alone. God, I feel really ashamed about what I've done this last week. God, I don't know, I'm just dissatisfied in life. Or God, I feel like I'm lost. Or God, I don't know what to do next. Will you help me? I mean, it's like your heart with God, transparent, real, you're just calling to him. Just like a kid would call to their parents. Get rid of your formalities. Get rid of what people think about your call. It's not really about that. It's about your heart speaking to God. I mean, you may have been here even this morning and you're singing, but in your heart is just speaking to God these things. Or you may have gotten here this morning and things are just a wreck in your life and you stood there quietly and you've just been praying to God. God, I am just dissatisfied in life. God, I have hard questions that I don't have answers to. God, things are messed up right now, and I don't see my way clear. God, I feel like I'm in a fog. God, where are you? I mean, some of you may have been asking that. Listen, when you start seeking the Lord, it means you just start praying, and you get real with God, and you start communicating your situation with God. There's this guy in the book of Acts. It's in Acts chapter 10. His name is Cornelius. He had never heard the good news about Jesus. He just knew there was a God. And it says this, he prayed to God continually until God sends Peter down to tell him the story about Jesus. But here's this dude. He's kind of lost in life, and Cornelius just prays to God. He calls out to God. He says, God, I want to know you, and I want to know what you want for my life, and I need your guidance, God. I had a friend, his name was Ty, and he told me about how he came to a saving understanding of who Jesus was. You see, he was kind of a guy who was at the end of his rope. He had been in the Marines, he'd been out of the Marines, he felt really lost in life. He actually felt like life was heading towards a dead end. A young guy without a lot of purpose and without a lot of hope. And one day, I mean, he was just so discouraged and downtrodden and hopeless and feeling so alone that he just got in his car and just started to drive. And he didn't even know where he was going. Have you ever been there? You've just been so overwhelmed by life, so hurting, you just want to run away. He didn't even know where he was going. He just got in his car and just started driving. He drives and he drives. I mean, he's just thinking it himself. He has no answers and he doesn't know where to turn or what to do anymore. And he passes by a church. Never been to this church before. Decides to pull in. Gets out of his car, goes, and this is the middle of the week. It's like a Tuesday, you know. Gets out of his car, goes up to the door, and it happened to be open. He walks into this church. He'd never been there. Found a place, something like this, and just got on his knees in the middle of the room and just says, God, if you're real, that's how he started. Do you know what that is? It's just a heart cry to God. He's just calling God, seeking God. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him. God, if you're real, would you do something in my life now? God. He's calling. What does it mean to seek? It means you start really praying to God. Listen, you've made a lot of calls this week. We could check your phone record. You've made a lot of calls this week, but how many of them have you made to God? You ever finish a phone conversation, you see how many minutes you were on the phone? That was another one. Wow, I was on for 34 minutes on that call. How's your phone conversation been with him? You know, it's something to me. We understand what it means to call, but if you're going to seek God, it means you start calling him. What does it mean to seek? It means call out to God. What does it mean to seek? He goes on. Take a look at the text. Seek the Lord while he may be found. In other words, call upon him while he's near. Here's the second thing it means to seek the Lord. In other words, it means you need to forsake your wicked ways and you need to get rid of your unrighteous thoughts. So take a look at verse 7. Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. To seek the Lord means you forsake your sinful patterns of life. You know what's interesting is if you get real with God, like if you decide, hey, I'm going to quit rebelling against God, I'm going to quit running from God, I'm going to quit tuning God out, I'm just going to, for real, just get real with God. When you start doing that, then you start calling on him. And when you start calling on him, do you know what he's going to do? Listen, this is what he's going to do. You start calling out to God, he is going to awaken your heart as though it's been slumbering or sleeping. He is going to awaken your heart to see things inside that you didn't see. He's going to open your eyes. He's going to quicken your conscience. When you start seeking the Lord, he's going to begin exposing things in your life that need to go. Because let's just think about it logically. When you start seeking the Lord, it means what were you doing before that? I mean, it's not hard. It's not a hard question. It means you weren't seeking him before that, right? So you start seeking the Lord, and then he begins to awaken your heart and illumine your conscience such that you realize, wow, I wasn't seeking him before. Wow, I've got some things in my life that need to go. You know what? I've actually been living in certain patterns of sin. You know what? If I'm going to seek God, it means I have to stop seeking after these things. If I'm going to go after God, it means I can't go after this anymore. I mean, when you start seeking the Lord, then what's going to happen is he's going to begin to teach you that you need to forsake sinful patterns of life. You know what's incredible to me? I've talked to a lot of people who have become new believers in Jesus. It means they've gotten to a place in their life where they understood they're a sinner, that it's hopeless for them to pursue life on their own, and they've turned their life over to God. I've been with a number of people who have just started that journey of faith. You know what's interesting to me? If you spend any time with those people, do you know what God does in their life? Like, you don't even have to tell them. They start telling you. They're like, you know, I've been thinking, I probably shouldn't be partying like I have been on Friday nights like that. I mean, you didn't have to like preach a message to them, get all preachy, give them 3 points. And you didn't have to do that. It's like God just awoken their heart. You know, I probably shouldn't be living with my girlfriend anymore until we get married. I mean, I have a buddy of mine. He's a firefighter. He's like a hoss of a dude. I mean, just this big bald guy that you don't want to meet in a dark alley. You know, I mean, just a big dude. His name's Mark. And he was a drug addict and a a fornicator and just a drunk. He was in such a mess of sin, he got kicked out of the Air Force. I mean, he was so drunk one night that he was so drunk the next morning that that he ends up getting kicked out of the Air Force. So he gets kicked out of the Air Force and he gets a contract job down in Venezuela. He's also a drug addict, which is a great place to go. I mean, go to South America, you know. So in the meantime, he gets a girl pregnant. Just a ruined life. He ends up high on cocaine, smashes his moped into a parked car, flies over the top of his moped and goes headfirst without a helmet into a light post. He ends up kind of paralyzed. He's bleeding out of his ear that they can't stop in the hospitals down there. They ship him back to the U.S. By God's grace, they were able to stop the bleeding. They were able to help this dude. But do you think it changed his life? Nope. Right back at it. Until he's in the fire department one day, and this short little guy comes up to this big hoss of a friend named Mark, and he looks him right in the eyes, and he says, "You know what you need? You need Jesus." I mean, boy, what courage, you know? I mean, you're a little short guy, and you come up to this big dude who's, you know, can break you in half, and he just says, "You know what you need? You need Jesus." I want to tell you something. That's exactly what Mark needed. Because he had not been seeking the Lord. He had been seeking all these other things that left him so depressed that he's also on antidepressants because he can't cope with life. All these things that are supposed to help him out and make him feel happy were leaving him empty and dry. Until this little dude comes up and says, "You need Jesus." And he says, "Okay, well, tell me about him." And this little guy had the courage just to share the good news that Jesus comes to forgive sins and fill your heart with what you can't fill of all this world offers. That Jesus is the one who lays this table and says, "Come unto me, all you who are thirsty. Come unto me, all you who are weak and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest." This little dude has the courage to tell this guy, Mark, the gospel message, and Mark gets saved. I mean, he just says, "God, okay, I'm not going to be driving my life off of a cliff anymore. I'm going to give my life to you." He turns his life over to the Lord. And as soon as he turns his life over to the Lord, no one had preached a message. He said, this is what he told me. He said, "I went home and I had like these really bad DVDs." He's like, "I just pulled out a trash bag and started chucking them away." Why did Mark do that? He said, I went to the fridge and got my alcohol and I just poured it right down the drain. Why did he do that? I'll tell you why. Because God awakened his heart. Because he started to seek the Lord. And when you start seeking the Lord, it means you start calling on him and you start forsaking your sinful patterns of life. Because the fact of the matter is you can't seek God and seek your sin at the same time. That's like trying to run in two directions at the same time. That's like trying to look two ways at the same time. Unless you have those weird eyes that can do that, it's just an impossibility. And if you do, don't tell anybody about that. I remember once, it was after church, I was just this little kid. I had a homeschool haircut, my bangs were cut straight across, my eyebrows like this, and I had these big old teardrop glasses that are supposedly cool now, but they weren't back then. And I'm in the parking lot, and I wasn't supposed to be in the parking lot after church. And I'm in the parking lot of the church, my dad was a pastor there, and we're playing football in the parking lot. And this kid throws this ball. And I'm running for it. It was like the NFL. It was a Super Bowl. I was going to catch the winning touchdown. And I just remember I'm running for this ball. I'm like looking at it and looking at where I'm going. I'm looking at it, and I'm coming close to cars. And I'm looking at it. There's like this hatchback Volkswagen thing. And I'm looking at it, and I grab the ball just like this, catch it, and turn and smashed my face right into the back of this Volkswagen. I mean, I just plastered my face just like that. I hit it so hard I broke my glasses right off my face. I mean, just busted my glasses. I got in a lot of trouble about that, but I'll tell you what, I learned a valuable lesson. Don't play football in the parking lot. That's okay, not that one. I learned a valuable lesson, and that is that you can't look in two directions at the same time. It just doesn't work. Let me tell you this, you can't live in two directions at the same time. If you're going to seek the Lord, it means you get real about calling out to him. And it means you forsake your sinful patterns of living. Come, church. Come to the Lord. Away from that garbage. Come, church, to a holy God. away from the sinfulness that leaves you empty. Come, church, to the Lord. That's what he says here. Why are you spending your money for that which is not bread and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Why are you seeking all these things that won't work? Come, church, to the Lord. Seek him, which means you may need this morning to make some hard decisions to quit these sinful patterns of living. Because when you start really seeking the Lord, he's going to root those things out of you. I want to tell you, one of the greatest illustrations in Scripture of how this played out was with this king named Josiah. Now, let me give you his grandfather and his father. His grandfather's name was Manasseh. This is in the book of 2 Kings. Manasseh was a dirtbag, and he was an idolatrous sinner. And you say, why are you calling him a dirtbag? Well, listen to what he did. Manasseh, in his reign, built high places of idolatrous worship all over Judah. He built altars to Baal and Ashtaroth. And listen to this. He even burned his own son as an offering. This was a king of Judah. He even sacrificed his own son as an offering. He engaged necromancers and demonic mediums. I mean, that's Manasseh. It says in the Scriptures, he did much evil in the sight of the Lord. And then his son did the same thing. His son's name was Ammon. And Ammon, this is what it says about him in 2 Kings 21. He walked in all the ways that his father walked. He served the idols his father served, and he worshipped them. And he abandoned the Lord. He did not walk in the way of the Lord. So you have Manasseh, Ammon, and then Josiah. Now listen to the difference about Josiah. In that sort of a culture, in that sort of a lineage, Josiah decides to seek the Lord. And what Josiah does is he looks at the ruin of the temple and he says, I want to send in workers to clean up the temple. So he sends these workers in and they go into the temple of all the rubble and ruin because God's house had been neglected for so long. Where were the people? They're all up in these high places serving idols. But Josiah says, no, I want this place cleaned. And so people come in, they start cleaning up the temple. And what do they find amongst all the garbage in there? Do you remember? They find scrolls of the Scriptures. Josiah says, bring those scrolls and read them to me. Here is a king in Judah who had not heard the word of the Lord. All of a sudden, they begin to read the scrolls to Josiah. And I'm just going to tell you what he does. He rips his clothes. I mean, he just rends his garments. And why is it? Because he has just been so sinful with all of these people and they've neglected the Lord. And so in 2 Kings 22, it says this, go and seek the Lord for me and for the people and for all of Judah concerning the words of this book that has been found, which is of great worth of the Lord. His wrath has been kindled against us because our fathers have not obeyed the words of this book to do according to all that is written therein. And so what does Josiah do? He gets rid of idolatrous priests. He tears down high places. He gets rid of altars. He kicks out sodomites and prostitutes from the city of God. I mean, what's going on with this guy's life? Is that he just begins to seek the Lord. And when he starts seeking the Lord, God begins to root out garbage. If you're going to truly seek him, it means you're going to start calling on him, and it means you're going to forsake your wicked ways and your unrighteous thoughts. Let's pause on that for a minute. You're going to forsake your wicked ways. That's the external things. That's the stuff you do. And you're going to clean up unrighteous thoughts. That's who you are. What does God really want to do? He wants you to seek him, and he wants your life cleaned up. He'll do this cleaning for you, this inside and outside stuff. He wants to change what you're doing. So stop doing. Leave behind. Make a decisive break with the sinful behavior that you've been involved in. Forsake your wicked ways. There's a 4th century theologian. His name is Augustine. How many of you have ever heard of the theologian named Augustine? Sometimes it's pronounced Augustine. I prefer Augustine. Potato, potato. Augustine was a man who lived in debauchery until he came to know the Lord. Actually, he lived with a prostitute for quite a while before his conversion. After he was wonderfully saved, the story's told of how he was walking down this street and this prostitute who he had formerly lived with saw him walking down the street and started to shout out his name, Augustine! Augustine! But he just kept walking as though he had not heard her, although he did. She began running towards him, but he kept walking as though he hadn't seen her, although he did. Augustine! Augustine! It is I! To which he turned and replied, but it is no longer I, and walked on. What was he saying there? He's saying, by the grace of God, I have started to seek him, and that means I have forsaken my wicked ways. It is no longer I. I want to tell you something. If you decide this morning that you need to get back to God, you need to start seeking him, you're going to have sins come running after you this week. And they will be calling your name. Because you've traveled down that path many times. And they don't like to be forgotten. So they will call your name and they will chase you. And the question is, what are you going to say? Yeah, but it is not I. That's what you tell them. Because I'm forsaking those wicked ways. I'm getting rid of those ungodly thoughts because now I have decided to seek the Lord. That's what he says happens to those who truly seek him. They get rid of their wicked ways, they abandon their unrighteous thoughts, and they pursue the Lord. They pursue the Lord with fervor. What does it mean to seek the Lord? Remember, that's our first question. It means you call out to him. It means you forsake your sinful patterns of living. I want to give one more description of what it means to seek the Lord. It comes from verse 7. Let the wicked forsake his way, the unrighteous man his thoughts. Here's the last part of what it means to seek the Lord. Let him return to the Lord. What it means to seek the Lord is you actually turn to him. Or for some of you, you return to him. It means you not only put off the garbage of sin, like forsake those wicked ways and those ungodly thoughts, you not only put it off, you also put on a pursuit of God. You turn from self to God. Joel puts it this way in the book of Joel, chapter 2, verse 12. It says, now therefore, says the Lord, turn to me with all your heart, with fasting, with weeping, with mourning. So rend your heart and not your garments. Return to the Lord your God. Return to him. I can't help but think in a group this large, the Spirit of God is calling to some of you to return to him this morning. Return to him. Turn to him. James puts it this way. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be wretched and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning, your joy to gloom. Draw near to God. Do you see that? Turn to him. Draw near to him. And he will draw near to you. It's not enough to look at your life and say, oh, I've headed all the wrong direction and take this wrong map, crumple it up, and throw it on the ground. That's not enough. You have to pick up the compass that points you in the right direction and you need to turn to him. You need to return to him. What does it mean to seek the Lord? It means you call out to him. Means you forsake your sinful patterns of living and you turn your heart to the Lord. Do you know, if you do that this morning, Jeremiah 29:13 says this, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord. You know, at this juncture, perhaps you know what it means now to seek the Lord. Okay, I get it, Lucas. I know what it means. But why is it that you're so ramped up this morning? Like you really have a sense of urgency about this. What's the big deal? I mean, I'll get around to it when I feel like getting around to it. I'll start seeking the Lord when I feel like it. I'll start seeking the Lord when it's a little more convenient. Wait, I still have stuff I want to do with my life before I pursue God. I'm not sure that I'm ready right now to seek the Lord. My friend, I want you to feel the sense of urgency from this text this morning. You see, this text doesn't say seek the Lord when you feel like getting around to it. This text doesn't say seek the Lord on another day. This text doesn't say, when you kind of get done with sowing your wild oats, then you can seek the Lord. No, that's not what it says. This text actually tells us why we need to seek the Lord today. And here's why. You need to seek the Lord today. Because if you don't, you will miss the nearness to God that you so desperately need. In other words, if you don't seek the Lord today, what's going to happen is there's going to remain a great gulf between you and God. Look at verse 8. My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, my thoughts than your thoughts. Now, many times these two verses are used out of context. Like many times people pull these verses out when they face things in life that confound them. So you face some sort of a difficulty in life, something that's very hard, or some sort of a theological issue that you don't understand, and you say, well, I mean, it's okay if I don't understand it, and it's okay if you don't understand it, because God's ways are higher than our ways, and His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And that's how people use this verse. You face difficult things, like a tornado strikes somewhere, someone you love contracts cancer, or a child dies. And we say, well, we don't know why these things happen, but God's ways are higher than our ways. I mean, that's how this gets used many times. We face a theological conundrum. Well, the Bible seems to talk about our volition and our will, but it also talks about election and predestination, and those are very complex, and it's kind of mind-blowing. Well, don't worry about it. God's ways are higher than our ways, and His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. Or I don't get the Trinity. I mean, the three is one is one God, three persons. How does that all work? Don't worry about it. God's ways are higher than our ways, and His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. That's how this often gets used. However, that's not the correct way to use this text. Although God is transcendent, and although, yes, His ways are higher than our ways, and His thoughts are higher, yes, I get that. But that's not what He's saying in this text. Let me show you what He's saying in this text. Let's just kind of put it in context. Verse 7 says, let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return, or in other words, let him seek the Lord. Why? Here's verse number 8. Because God's thoughts and ways are not wicked and unrighteous like ours. In fact, they are as far above our evil and misguided pattern of life as the heavens are above the earth. And so it's not talking about God's transcendence or distinction over things that we don't understand. It's actually talking about the distance between sinners and a holy God. He's saying, seek the Lord while He may be found, because if you don't, there's going to be this huge gap between you and the Lord. In other words, His ways are going to be this high as the blue sky is above the dirt of the earth. He says, if you don't seek the Lord, the chasm between you and God is going to be as far as the heavens are above the earth. God's ways are not wicked and His thoughts are not unrighteous. And if you don't seek Him, you're going to remain that far away. And so kind of the first thing that Isaiah is saying here is you need to seek the Lord. Because if you don't, you're going to miss out on the nearness that God wants to have with you. There will remain this chasm, this distance, this distinction between you and God. Quite frankly, before you seek the Lord, your ways and your thoughts are drastically different from God's. So here, let's put it in context. So dads, if you don't seek the Lord, then you're trying to lead your home with thoughts and actions that are distant from God. How distant from God? Well, as distant as the heavens are from the earth. We kind of like to think, I think I can come up with some good answers on my own. Really? God's ways are not your ways, and His thoughts are not your thoughts, and it's because you're not seeking Him. Or ladies, if you aren't seeking the Lord, then your thoughts and ways will not be God's. You'll be bringing the baggage of self into parenting and into marriage. and you'll be far away from God's thoughts and God's ways. Or friend, maybe you're facing a major decision in life. If you're not seeking the Lord, how are you going to come to the right conclusion? Because your thoughts are not his thoughts and your ways are not his ways. Do you see how important it is to seek the Lord? If you don't seek the Lord, then there's going to be this huge gap between you and God, and you desperately need God's embrace. You desperately need the mind of Christ. You desperately need the mind of the Spirit. You desperately need that, and that only comes when you seek the Lord. You know, God doesn't want us to remain distant from him. God doesn't want our thoughts to diverge from his thoughts. Actually, he wants to span this gap. Take a look at this text again. In verse number 9, it says, "For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." So it's showing this chasm between God and us. And if we seek the Lord, what's going to happen is he's going to bridge this chasm. He's going to demonstrate his love in such a way that the distance between heaven and earth can be spanned. Let me read you Psalm 103, verses 8 and 11. "The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love." Now listen to this. "For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is God's steadfast love toward those who fear him." Or in other words, towards those who seek him. God's steadfast love can span the gap between heaven and earth towards those who seek him. And let me ask you something. What was the one demonstration of steadfast love that spanned the gap between heaven and earth? Oh, my friends, you know what it is. God sent his only begotten Son so that whoever would believe in him will not perish but will have everlasting life. There was one who took the gap between man and God and spanned the distance. It was this ultimate act of love that laid the trusses and set the wires for the bridge between sinful man and holy God, and it was the cross of Jesus. If you seek the Lord through Christ, then you no longer have to be apart from God, this chasm that separates you. You no longer have to be distant from him. Instead, Christ will span that distance for you. So hear the good news. Christ died for you while you're still a sinner. Hear the good news. God proves his love towards us that if we will forsake our sin and turn to God, then by the work of Christ, the distance between our sinfulness and God's holiness can be spanned. Hear the good news. Why should you seek him? Because if you don't, there will remain this great gulf, an eternal gulf between you and God. Here's the second reason why you should seek him. You should seek him because if you don't, you will miss his loving and longing embrace. Look at verse number 7. "Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return to the Lord." What kind of Lord? Let him return to the Lord. What is the disposition of this Lord? Let him return to the Lord, verse 7, "so that he may have compassion on him and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon." I don't know what you think about when you read that, but here's what I think about. I think about the prodigal son who spent all of his livelihood on parties and prostitutes until he had nothing left and he sat in a pile of pig slop. I mean, for a Jew to sit in a pile of pig slop is about as bad as it gets. He had nothing and he's starving. And he says to himself, "I'm not worthy to be my father's son anymore. I'll go home and ask if I can just be a servant." And so he trudges this long and shameful road home, only to find that at the road is his father, who has been going out to the road day after day after day with his arms wide open, waiting for his son to return. So my friend, this passage says, seek the Lord. Why? Because there is a compassionate and an abounding, loving father who has his arms open, who is waiting to forgive and embrace you. If you don't seek the Lord, you're going to miss His loving and longing embrace. Sometimes I wonder if there are cynical sinners, addicts of uncleanness, habitual failures, people who just struggle time after time, and they wonder if there's any forgiveness left from God. My friend, hear the word of the Lord. Hear the word of the Lord. He wants to have compassion on you, verse 7. He wants to abundantly pardon you, verse 7. Maybe you're a man here this morning, you've been battling with a sin struggle. You say to yourself, I failed again. I can't return to the Lord. How could I return to the Lord? I've fallen the same way so many times. Don't believe that lie. Listen to the word of the Lord. He wants to have compassion on you and forgive you this morning. Maybe there's a teenager here. You've committed secret sins. My parents don't know about it, but I do, and I'm riddled with guilt. I don't know if God could ever forgive me. Teenager, hear the word of the Lord. He wants to have compassion on you, and He wants to forgive you. Maybe there's a woman here who says, I've wandered so far from God that returning seems like an endless and perhaps hopeless journey. No, ma'am. Hear the word of the Lord. If you seek Him today, He will have compassion on you, and He will abundantly pardon. You see, this prodigal walked up the street still dripping from the pig slop, and what he expected, what he was bracing himself for, was condemnation. But what he got in return was compassion. His father didn't scorn him and berate him. No, the father embraced him and forgave him. You see, condemnation has already been poured out. The condemnation you deserve has already been poured out on the Son of God. That's Isaiah 53. So that by the time we get to Isaiah 55, we can learn that the condemnation's been poured out so that the compassion can be shown to us. I think that's why Micah, the prophet in Micah 7, it kind of blows his mind. Who is a God like you? Pardoning iniquity, passing over transgression. You do not retain your anger forever because you delight in steadfast love. You will again have compassion on us and you will tread our iniquities underfoot. How isn't it tiring for you to try to tread your iniquities underfoot? You've tried to do it. You've tried to reform. You've tried to get things right. You've tried to fix it up. Isn't that tiring? You need someone who can truly do it. That is God. He wants to have compassion on you and tread your iniquities underfoot. I just think about the serpent getting crushed under the foot of Jesus. You can't do it. He has already done it. Seek Him. That's what He's saying here. Seek the Lord. Seek the Lord so that you can feel His compassion. Don't delay. If you fail to seek the Lord, then there's going to remain a great gulf between you and God, and you'll miss His open arms of compassion. I think there's just one more thing I want to highlight from this text. If you fail to seek the Lord today, I mean, if you want to delay, you want to put it off, then you may miss your window of opportunity. Sometimes I feel like there's this mistaken conception of God where He's like this old grandfatherly figure somewhere up in the clouds and He sits in a rocking chair. He has a white beard that He strokes and He doles out forgiveness and compassion and love and, you know, happy miraculous blessings whenever people come and deposit their quarter of church attendance. You know, I went to church today, click the quarter, out comes my prize. Thanks, God. I think people have this concept that God is just this benevolent grandfatherly figure on a rocking chair who doles out good things when I need it and I get around to needing it. I mean, they can ignore Him. They can go their own way. They can do whatever they want. When I get around to it, then happy grandfather up there will give me what I want and He'll fix things up. I can make my messes and then God, I'll just go. Come on, God, here's my deposit. Oh, Sunday at church. I read my Bible today. Here's the deal in this passage. The deal in this passage is this. There is a window of opportunity. It is open. There is amnesty today. But you don't know how long it's open. Which is why if you will carefully read this text, it says, seek the Lord while. Do you see the key word, while? It means there's a window of opportunity. Seek the Lord while He may be found. You know what it's indicating? It's indicating He's not always going to be findable. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Do you know what that's indicating? It's indicating that he is near today. He is perhaps even knocking on your heart's door, but he will not always knock. People want to run their own way and run their own life and do their own thing and think that somehow God's going to be like this desperate, dumped girlfriend who will come back to you whenever you feel like it. And that's not the case. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near, because there is a window of opportunity and it will not always be open. That's what this passage is saying. Right now, God allows himself to be found, so run to him. When my kids were little, we would do hide and seek. And I don't know if you've played hide and seek with little children, but if you have, you realize that you really can't hide in hard places. Otherwise, you will be there a very long time, you know. But you're in the back of your closet for hours. You know, they've forgotten that they're even playing anymore, but you're relishing in the fact that you found the greatest hiding spot. You can't really hide in good places when you're playing with little kids, because they'll never find you. Okay. You have to hide in findable places. You know, like you're sitting in the middle of the room with a blanket over your head. You know, I mean, like that's more like it. There you are. You're in a findable spot. And I just want to say this. When it says in this passage, seek the Lord while he may be found, in the Hebrew it's literally this: seek the Lord while he allows himself to be found. He's sitting in a findable place right now. If you read Isaiah 65, I mean, if you fast forward a few chapters, it says this: I have spread out my hands all day to a stubbornly rebellious people who have walked in a way that is not good, following their thoughts. I will surely let myself be sought by those who did not ask, and let myself be found by those who did not seek. I am determined to say, behold me, behold me. Do you know what God is saying? He's saying, you need to seek me today while I may be found. And I'm actually standing on the top of a chair, waving my arm, saying, look, I'm right here. I'm right here. Seek the Lord while he's allowing himself to be found. Call upon him while his nearness is here. You can't read this and miss the story of Noah. You say, Noah? Where's Noah in this text? Well, the mention of Noah is nowhere in this text, but the idea of Noah is all through it. You say, why? Well, because think about a window of opportunity. Think about Noah. This is what he's called. He is called a preacher of righteousness. Did you know Noah was a preacher? That's how the New Testament refers to him. He was a preacher of righteousness. 100 and some odd years, Noah's preaching righteousness to people who only did wicked. That's all they did. They just did wickedness continually. But Noah's out there preaching righteousness, warning. Seek the Lord. Turn to the Lord. Go back to God. I mean, he's a preacher of righteousness, and the whole time he's building this huge boat out in the middle of a desert. And I'm going to tell you something. With each board that was added, he was also preaching the righteousness of God, that judgment was coming. He pled with people. He begged with people. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. You can imagine Noah standing in the doorway, a wrinkled, weathered man who had spent years and years and years building this ark and pleading with people to come. You can imagine the tears rolling down his face as the first drops of rain came and as God closed the door. How many family members and friends, how many people he loved would not listen? Not now, Noah. Maybe I'll get around to it some other day, Noah. I'm seeking my own way, Noah, and this is a lot more fun. I don't know what you're doing. And the door closes. And the only other sound he hears from them is screaming from judgment. My friend, let that not be you. While he is findable, seek him. While he is near, draw close to him. That is the message of this text. There's a story told of a mother, son, and a daughter, and they were clinging to the upper branches of a large tree surrounded by raging floodwaters. There was a rescue team who came in a boat. They could not get all the way up to the tree because of the debris. But the distance between the boat and the tree could be jumped with effort. And so the team calls out to them with urgency. They yell, "Jump! Jump while there's still time." Family members were afraid. Finally, summoning up as much courage as he could, the son jumps and he lands safely into the boat. Then the daughter, she's hesitant, she's scared, she's crying a bit, but she jumps. She fell a little bit short, but the rescuers grab her before she's swept away and they pull her up into the boat. And then the mother was left. They began to plead with the mother, "Jump, jump, you can do it. It's the only way to be saved. We'll catch you if you fall short. Jump." Even though the invitation was compelling and the rescuers cried with urgency, she delayed. As the mother debated whether to jump or to remain in the apparent safety of the tree, there was a terrible crack. The limb broke, and suddenly a snap, and she plunged into the water. And she was swept away in the torrent. She had this window of opportunity, but decided not to take it. And then it was too late. My friends, this passage is a plea from God to you to seek Him today. It means just start calling out to Him right now. Call out to Him. Forsake your wickedness. Turn your heart towards Him. Allow the love of Christ to close that gap between you and God. Allow Him to embrace you with loving arms of compassion and forgiveness. While there's still time, seek the Lord. Let's pray.